Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi folks, welcome to another of our political chats. Today we're going to be talking about the situation in Makerfield, because that's really the only thing worth talking about until Thursday, or Friday, really, which is when we get the results, and we get to find out how things played out. Before we begin, Dan, have you got any predictions? Dare you make any?
I mean, I woefully underestimated what they were going to do in Great Yarmouth, so... but. I have no particular reason to disbelieve their internal polling, which is coming out in the low 20s, so I'll just say that, low 20s.
Seems reasonable. I honestly have no idea. Like, yeah. The polls are all over the place. I don't really believe the establishment polls, which we'll get into in a minute. This does very, very much feel like an exercise in the polls are designed to influence the electorate rather than measure the electorate with these polls.
Yeah, the polling companies, and there's only a couple of them that got involved, and they've only done small samples, but it feels like they're taking a hit for the greater good.
It does. It's actually very strange how disinterested the polling companies seem to be in Makerfield. If this is such a titanic battle for the future of the country...
If this is really going to decide the next prime minister, and only what, two of them are curious enough to do a poll?
There have been three now.
Oh, okay. Right.
Three whole polls from the dozens of polling companies who, for some reason, were just like, yeah, no, that's boring.
Yeah, there's nothing to see here. No polling to be done here.
It's really strange.
Yes.
But yeah, for myself, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I do think Andy Burnham's probably going to win it. So I haven't been there, but we've had lots of our chaps who have been there, lots of our activists who are there, and you'll see how many of our activists are there.
I mean, he should. I mean, he handpicked this seat.
Yeah.
He could have gone anywhere. I mean, if he's going to be the next Prime Minister, he has so much power of patronage. He could have gone to any MP in the whole Manchester area and said, I'll make it worth your while to step aside. And he chose Makerfield.
Yeah.
So he should win.
I mean, why would he choose it if he's not intending to win? But also, what was the name of the MP who stood down? Was it Luke Simmons or something?
That sounds right.
Yeah, yeah. He is actually a really well-liked MP in the area. He's not from the area, but apparently he's done a lot for the area in sort of Rupert Lowe fashion, actually. A lot of people are actually disappointed to see him go because he had quite good name recognition, even though outside of Makerfield, no one's heard of him, ever heard of this MP. But anyway, so let's look at some of the polls. So here's a poll from Convergent, which is a company I'm actually not familiar with.
Is this a new one?
It is a fairly new one. This was from up until the 12th of June, so only a few days ago. And sample size of 525, which is apparently a fine sample size for the size of the constituency. But I would be very suspicious about these results because they had Labour on 49%.
I mean, it does seem odd. And again, I just keep going back to my point from last week. If Restore are really polling below the Green Party at 5%, why is the entire mainstream media and Reform, why are they talking about nothing but Restore? If that poll is true and their internal polling is showing the same, they would be going after Labour, but they're not saying anything about Labour. They're only going after the people who are fourth.
Why, exactly. Like, why was the Daily Mail dedicating an entire front page to calling us Nazis?
Yes.
If we're in fourth place and aren't... I mean, even the vote-splitting argument doesn't work here, because even if you added up the Conservatives, Restore and Reform, you still don't beat Labour there. So
yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Why are they spurging out about us in this way? And so I'm not persuaded by this.
And I mean, look at the Greens and the Conservatives, in very much the same orbit as Restore, according to this poll.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about the Conservatives. They've disappeared. Nobody talks about the Greens even. But they're all talking about this random party that's polling the same as the Greens and the Conservatives. Why?
It would be inexplicable if, as you said, we haven't had a very recent example of why it actually might be that there is a kind of hidden restore vote out there. Because as you can see at the bottom, it says excluding those who don't intend to vote and adjusted by likelihood to vote. As in, So these are figures that have been somewhat massaged based on how did you vote in 2024? How are you feeling about any of these candidates from these parties? And of course, Restore's constituency seems to be those disaffected people who don't tend to vote.
So if they rang you up for this poll and you said, oh, I'm intending to vote for Restore Britain, and they said, when was the last time you voted? And they say 1995. That they are massively deranking you, excluding you.
Yes, they're going to manipulate the data based on that. And so I can't help but feel there's a kind of willful blindness that's been introduced into these polls, because if you are going to weight it and adjust it based on how they previously voted, well, a lot of these people won't have previously voted.
Yes.
And so you're carving out a constituency of voters who, like, as people have mentioned, Dominic Cummings with Brexit,
yes,
brought these people out and blindsided you.
Well, and the polls before Brexit were saying it was going to be a slam dunk, an absolute slam dunk. They were going to win by 20 points or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought we were going to lose Brexit.
Yeah. And we didn't lose Brexit because they didn't take into account the people who hadn't historically voted.
Yes. And so anyway, like you said, it doesn't really make sense for them to otherwise be attacking us so intensively. But we'll get onto the actual on-the-ground reporting of it in a minute. Because again, the polls can be useful, but are also sometimes wildly wrong. And I've just spoken to loads of our activists in Makerfield, and we don't think that 50% of people in this constituency are voting for Labour.
Yeah.
We just don't think that's the case.
Well, I mean, just a fundamental question, right? If polls are good and accurate, why does every political party commission their own internal polls that they don't release?
That's a great question.
Why would you bother?
And why are Restore Britain the only party who did release their internal poll?
Well, apart from we've heard leaks from various people in Labour sources.
Sure, they would
say
leaks, yeah. But no, Restore Britain just published theirs.
Yes.
Our returns are 24%, so, you know.
But the leaks from Labour is like, yeah, that one's actually accurate. The Restore stuff is accurate.
Anyway, we've got more polls. Here's from Opinionum. I'm pronouncing that wrong. Anyway, so they found that we were on 7%. And again, you can see, if you can read there, this is results of 400 respondents who are at least 7 out of 10 likely to vote and gave a voting intention. So again, they are carving off particular number of people who didn't vote or say they're not likely to vote or something like that.
They're carving off 30% of the respondents, yeah.
Yeah, basically, yes. And so, who knows? But again, 7%, so I mean, at least it's substantive above Conservatives and Greens, and it is enough to feed the splitting the vote narrative. And again, this was from the 11th of June at the latest, so who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
Same sort of perspective on this. Then we have a third one, which is from More in Common. More in Common, not tremendously reliable. And the thing is, I couldn't actually find any granular detail on this. So it was originally published in the Times. I go to the Times article, and all they said is that they polled Makerfield by sample, by telephone and online between May the 28th and June the 12th. Okay.
Okay, right.
So I don't have any further information about this that I could get. But this, again, Restore on 8%, Reform on 40%, Labour on 45%. It's going to be the split the vote narrative. But again,
it does annoy me, the split the vote narrative. So if come the next election,
yeah,
if there isn't a Restored candidate to vote for, I'm not going to vote.
Well, yeah, obviously.
And that's apparently me splitting the vote.
Well, they do feel entitled to your votes. As far as, well, remember, it's the Jacob Rees-Mogg political socialism philosophy.
Yes.
Everyone who votes was guaranteed to vote, and all of those votes are shared out among various political parties.
Well,
so you get a slice of your pie.
In his view, it is split solely between are you a right winger or a left winger.
Yeah.
His political view is genuinely as simple as that.
It really is.
And if you are nominally right wing, well, okay, that means that you have to vote for Reform, which is odd because he's literally a member of a party which is running a candidate in Makerfield.
And that's all, but as we've spoken about before, it's also just wrong-headed, as in there is not just this fixed pie of voters that are automatically shared between the different political parties. No, people actually choose different things based on how they feel the country is going and what's on offer. And sometimes they vote, sometimes they don't vote. This is actually a free market.
Yes.
So this kind of your splitting the vote political socialism argument is really weird coming from Jacob Rees-Mogg, who is an ardent free marketeer, but also is not accurate.
Well, and also, if the Jacob Rees-Mogg view of politics was correct, why do we bother having elections? You just, when you get to 18, you just mark a card that says your left ring or white ring,
yeah,
and then they just tot it up and they just, why would you bother voting?
Yeah. So what's weird, though, is the betting markets have got all the money on Restore. Now, this isn't a prediction. This isn't a poll. This isn't anything other than people's gut feeling.
Yeah, right? It's the weight of money invested. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's weight of money invested. People, you know, taking a gamble on Restore winning. So they put 100 quid on it or whatever. Yeah. They might make, I don't know, however much, you know, grand or something like that, however much out of it. But it's just really weird that that's where the betting markets went. It's just really strange. And again, I just can't believe the Labour 45% number. Now, there is definitely a burn and bounce. But remember, in the local elections, Reform stormed them. They won everything. All of the council elections in Makerfield, in that area. And there was something like 25 seats or something like this. That was in this the area around this constituency. Labour have been on the downswing. Now, is Andy Burnham personally enough to pull all of that back? I don't know. Maybe, but I just...
I mean, I suppose it's possible that the people of Makerfield just desperately, desperately want Keir Starmer out.
And sure.
This is the easiest way to achieve it. I mean, and I can sympathise with that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but again, trust the Labour Party at your peril. Anyway, so a lot of people are like, well, why aren't you on the right particularly bothered about Andy Burnham? So, because Andy Burnham isn't a radical, frankly. Like, just think of some of the things that Keir Starmer has done or pledged to, right, over the last 2 years, right? First thing first, he came out and was like, I'm against the British public because you're rioting over Southport.
Yes. Right?
He just came out and just said, no, this is unacceptable. 24-hour courts, you're going to jail for being upset that a bunch of children were murdered.
Yes.
And then you've got other things. You've got the jury trials. You've got the digital IDs, which he's cramming through. Now, all of these things are insane. And this...
I mean, if you're not from Britain, to give you an idea of just how hated Keir Starmer is, right, my kids found out yesterday that he's going to ban YouTube.
Oh, yeah, that too.
My kids don't even know who Keir Starmer is. They loathe the man.
Yeah.
They were like, who's doing this? And I said, oh, the Prime Minister. And they were both like, we hate him.
Yeah. Because
even people who don't know who he is despise him.
Like, everything he does is overbearing. Everything he does is extreme in its own way. And so is Andy Burnham going to be worse than that? No. Andy Burnham is just going to be a kind of soft left socialist, right? Where he's going to put government money into Manchester because that's where he's from and that's his constituency. And he might actually build some stuff, frankly. Like, you know, it doesn't benefit me. I'm not in Manchester.
But the remarkable question here that Lucy is asking is, and I've seen a lot of people do this, is saying, oh, we've all got to coalesce around Reform because otherwise we're going to get a Labour government. It's like...
we've got a Labour government.
Yeah, exactly. We've already got a Labour government. It is just we're going to be changing a completely awful, soulless Prime Minister for a clueless Labour Prime Minister. Yeah. I would rather have a clueless Prime Minister rather than an actively evil one, which is who is operating on 50 years of Fabian programming to undermine the tenets of the country.
Like, I don't have any particular respect for Andy Burnham's political career.
No.
He's failed every leadership challenge he's mustered. So I'm not even convinced that he can unseat Starmer. Mm. I think actually a lot of them will just be like, well, better the devil you know. Right.
And also it will tear the Labour Party apart, the leadership.
Of course. But also, Andy Burnham, the rumour around him, oh, he's going to call a general election. Well, God, that would be bad.
There's no way.
Yeah, there's no way. There's no way he's going to do it. But imagine if you're a Labour politician sitting in Parliament, you're like, but is he going to call a general election? Yeah. Then I lose my seat to the Greens or to Reform or to Restore or to whatever. Then why would, you know, no, I might just stick with Keir Starmer because Keir Starmer, like you're saying, Keir Starmer is like an evil robot sent from the future to destroy this country.
But at least if you're a Labour backbench MP, you get to draw an 80 grand salary for the next 3 years.
Exactly. That's why you'd stick with Keir Starmer. But for the average person, like, okay, let's say, I mean, it's inevitable that it happens. Burnham overthrows Starmer, becomes Prime Minister, and then the next day there's a Southport. Right, another Southport happens.
Yeah.
Does he come out and threaten the British public? Probably not, actually. No. You know, whatever you think.
But by the same token, he's not going to come out and say millions must go.
No, of course.
So
good.
He's still going to completely unsatisfy people.
Yes.
We're still going to end up with a change of government in 3 years.
Yes. And he's committed to Shabana Mahmood's immigration policy. He's committed to Rachel Reeves's economic policy. He's committed to Ed Miliband's green policy.
And half of those things you just mentioned are the reason why the Labour... So, yes, the Labour Party are losing something like 17% of their vote to the right,
but
they're losing 16% to the left.
Yes.
So with those policies you just put out, none of them are going to satisfy the right or the left. The Labour Party is still going to get ripped apart in 3 years' time, but for the reasons you've outlined, he can't win a leadership election by promising to hold an election afterwards. So he is going to have to assure all those Labour backbenchers, don't worry, I'm not going to do an election.
And Keir Starmer can just say he is going to, by the way. He's going to ruin us. But moreover, like I said, Andy Burnham, I mean, already Andy Burnham's net favourability is going down, right? Because it looks like he might become the leader of the Labour Party. And the salience of Andy Burnham in the public mind is that people are like, oh, good, another Labour politician, great. But on a personal level, he seems like a likeable guy and he seems like a human, which would be a step up from what we've got at the moment.
He's just got no concept of how the economy works.
Of course. It's just going to be more tax to spend. But the point is, like, for us on the right, this is no particular difference. Like, people like, would you like to eat a bowl of cat feces or a bowl of dog feces? It's like, well, I don't really have a preference there.
Yeah.
And then Restore Britain swags into the room and goes, why wouldn't you rather eat this delicious medium rare fillet steak? And we go, yes, that sounds brilliant. And then Reform enters and say, hi, we're a miserable grey flat plastic burger that's been heated up after sitting in an abandoned freezer for 10 years.
Yes.
Why don't you vote for us? And then you don't have to eat the dog feces or the cat feces. It's like, but I could just have the steak.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So, anyway, this, I think, is why, and I really do think this is why the passion for reform seems to be completely absent in this election.
Right. So I put up a tweet the other day because I just said, look, while we've been talking about this, I put up dozens of videos, many, many tweets. I've seen what the reform guys are saying. I am yet to see the positive case for reform.
Yeah. And that's been reform's problem. Not just in this one. This is, of course, the problem with Gorton and Denton.
Yes.
Matt Goodwin running around like Alan Partridge saying, Keir Starmer's going to put your children on a flight to Mars and, you know, whatever, all this nonsense.
But I put this tweet up and specifically said to all the reformers out there, please give me the positive case for reform.
Dan Wharton did the same.
It all didn't happen.
It just isn't one. It's just we're not going to let Andy Burnham get into government. It's like, that's not the threat that you think it is.
Well, the argument used to be, we're not the Tories at the last election, but then they hired all the Tories, and now it's we're not Labour. Okay, but
get
what is
Starmer out?
What is the reason for you?
Well, I mean, in the locals, it was get Starmer out, but that didn't work.
Yes, that's flipped. Now it's get Starmer in.
Starmer loses a bunch of local elections and that gets rid of Starmer. Well, that didn't happen, did it?
Yes.
So now it's literally keep Starmer in, for whatever reason. That's like, I actually do think Andy Burnham would be a step up from Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point being is this lack of positive message is not inspiring the country to come out and support reform. So this is the two canvassers on Saturday. So the Saturday for all of the parties is like the last big day they can get a bunch of activists there. And for reform, probably about 60. But there's not that many. And
what's even worse, like, was it Tice or whatever? One of the top reformers came out and said reform's brought an army.
Yeah.
And I replied to that and said, look, that's not even a platoon.
Yeah, that's
whereas you look at Restore's one, that's a battalion.
Yeah. From reports of our friends on the ground, they reckon about 1,000 people turned up to go and canvass.
And the thing is, this photo doesn't capture it, but when you see the video of this, they pan around and there's loads of people behind
everywhere.
Us. It's that all the way around.
Yeah. So we're completely mogging them on the number of activists that we have actually there. And you see like this empty bus driving around. Now, you know, in their defense, they're probably just trying to raise awareness, but it looks kind of bad when it's just an empty bus driving around.
Restore would have filled it.
Absolutely. And people got emails saying, well, hang on a second. Reform were charging people to go on the buses, originally £50, to go up to Makefield to canvass for them. But they've reduced it to £0 to encourage people to go up.
Right. So they cut it to £0. Bus was still empty.
The bus was still empty, and as we saw, they only got about 60 people up.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone for Restore are paying, as far as I'm aware, paying for it out of their own pocket. And
there would be,
this is where the enthusiasm gap is.
Oh, there's a bit of a gap. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just very strange, right? Why is Reform the sort of party that really is, it's currently, you know, leading in the polls, but unable to actually muster an organic grassroots groundswell of support? Why is that the case? Very, very strange, isn't it? And it could be
because the political activists have gone elsewhere because they found the real deal.
Well, exactly. That's exactly the point.
And I wonder how many of those activists were Reform activists 3 years ago.
And how many of them were paid? Because this Indian chap who Will Coleshill found putting leaflets through doors refused to talk to him, obviously. But apparently afterwards, a few of our chaps were there and they messaged me going, we think these were paid activists, as in they seem to have a kind of like a particular composition in there.
Yes.
And they have a small number of groups going around and they think they were paid activists, which is why they're no interest
in talking. Because, I mean, it's totally a thing you can do. You can hire people in your local area to go and deliver takeaway menus or double glazing. Yep. And they often look a bit like that chap.
Yeah. And that's none of the Reform activists, the canvassers, want to talk to the media or anything.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, the Restore ones, there are lots of votes.
Well, you can't shut them up.
Yeah, exactly. You can't shut them up.
No, they grab the mic and give you a 20-minute monologue.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, is this a case of there is a Reform sort of, you know, air war going on, but actually on the ground war, Reform are very, very weak and don't seem to actually be getting the job done on the doorstep? Because, I mean, as you pointed out, the Daily Telegraph did a whole video where they went up to Makerfield.
I love this video. It was so funny.
And they were trying to ask people, you know, or who you're interested in talking to. Was it not that they didn't find a single Reform vote?
So this video is so funny because they didn't talk about Restore at all in their intro or the beginning bit. The first 10 minutes, they didn't mention Restore at all. And they're saying, we're going to go up to Makerfield and we're going to find out what's going on between Labour and Reform. Right, they get up there and they start looking for a Reform person to speak to. And all they can find is a Reform person to speak to. All they can find is Restore people. And this one guy they go and talk to, and they come out afterwards, and Tim Stanley, who is obviously a bit of a cuck, he comes out and he's like, he was so reasonable and made such good points. I thought that Restore were a bunch of raving neo-Nazis, but this is just a sensible middle-class guy. Yeah. And then there's an even funnier bit before that where they're stood out on the street, right? And all these cars are going past honking. And they think, wow, everybody knows two obscure journalists from the Daily Telegraph. And then they look around and realise they're stood next to a Restore sign. And they're like, oh, people think we were Restore.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, right, that's interesting, isn't
it? And then...
Again, enthusiasm gap
here. Yeah. Right? And then they go to the Reform HQ to say, we're from the Telegraph, can we speak to anyone?
Not a person.
And it's like, no, you can't.
You would think the Daily Telegraph has been running defence for Reform for months now.
Well, so in this country, for anyone who's followed, we used to call the Telegraph the Tory graph. It is now 100% the Reformer graph.
Yeah, just like the Daily Mail at this point, actually. But yeah, like you say, they were getting honks for Restore. They found, in fact, look, this is only a minute long. Let's watch this because it's just great.
You're actually a Rupert Lowe fan.
I am, yes. I did follow Reform for a little while. I was a Labour supporter a long time ago,
right?
But things seem to have shifted. They don't seem, personally, the Labour side of things don't seem to be following sort of the sort of working class routes that they sort of started off on. I did start to go over to Reform and follow a lot of their things. I do work security at an airport, so I see a lot of the border issues and things like that. I actually started following Rupert Lowe when he was still in Reform. And then sort of saw what happened and got a bit disenfranchised, really, with Farage. I don't really trust the guy. What a lot of things he said, he always seems to follow the popular tack, and suddenly he'll jump onto things and say, oh, yeah, this is the latest and greatest. But looking at things recently with his sort of voting and the thing, how much time he's actually spent in Parliament rather than smoozing with his pals and going off and going on holidays and doing all sorts of things. I started following to Rupert Lowe.
Yeah.
It's exactly what we've been saying, right? This was Farage's to lose, and yes. He lost it on his character. His point that, you know, I was a Labour voter, obviously, but Labour were terrible. So I started following Reform because Farage was the thing in the media and he got my attention. But then Rupert Lowe was actually doing the work. And so then Farage kicked him out, and I was like, well, Farage is the used car salesman of British politics. I don't really trust him. And she's just like, oh my God, a resource problem. He's a completely normal man.
Yes.
I work at the airport and I see the problem with the border.
It completely blew Tim Stanley's mind, because in Tim Stanley's mind, Restore were just the most extreme neo-Nazis imaginable.
Yeah.
And he's actually just normal people with good arguments.
Yeah, no, I bet he's a dad. I bet he's, you know, married with kids.
Yeah.
He works doing normal things and he's like, oh God, we have to change this. And who's the one person who's actually saying, speaking to him in a way that resonates? It's Rupert Lowe.
And the reason why the Telegraph knocked on that door is because they'd spoken to Reform HQ before and said, what part of Makerfield is your prime territory? So that's why they went there.
Yeah. So it's just remarkable. I mean, we've got this more from the Daily Mail, and we can't show you because we've got to subscribe. But Dan Hodges has been strangely fascinated with Restore. And he, as we covered last time, he's like, they're going to start attacking Restore and that's just going to increase the salience.
He was right, yeah.
And he was right. And he's been speaking to voters, and it's just the same sort of story. It's the same story. No, we're disappointed with Farage. We're disappointed with Reform. We want something that's actually the red meat of politics. And so you saw a lot of... like Reform supporters being like, why is extreme left-wing journalist Burnham Sycophant, a renowned Reform hater, Dan Hodges there? Oh, it's because he's a big fan of Rupert Lowe. No, it's because he understands this. He, dare I say it, he's doing a bit of journalism, right?
Well, the thing is, he's established enough that he can actually say what he wants to say.
Exactly. Yeah. He can actually go down, and because he's a Reform hater. He thinks Reform are going to win the next election. Yeah. So for him... this is already a lost cause, right? There's no point doing activism for Dan Hodges at this point. So he's actually resigned to doing journalism for his sins. And so what's he found? Well, he's found a lot more support than he expected.
Yeah.
And this has been a thing that's perennially been popping up for all of them in all of their podcasts that we've been covering. Like the Times, the Daily Telegraph, the New Statesman. They're all like, wow, there's actually really quite a lot of organic support for Restore Britain here.
So, yeah. And they all follow the same format. They frame it as, we're going to do some investigation to find out what's going on between Reform and Labour. And then they get there and everyone wants to talk about Restore.
Yes. This is Dan Hodges did another one on this. Not Dan Hodges. Robert Hardman, got the same sort of thing. Where, again, look, it's going to be closer than you expected because Restore. They can tell that there is something going on in Makerfield that is not normal in the traditional paradigm that we are slowly but surely dragging them out of. And so unwillingly being dragged out of this paradigm. Yes. They're like, yeah, but I love red and blue. And Nigel Farage is established, and therefore he fits nicely into the sort of cinematic universe of British politics.
Well, these people have a simple conception of politics, which is there's a right-wing party and a left-wing party. It's Labour versus Tory. And in their minds, they've just said, okay, well, the Reform is going to substitute Tory, but it's the same mechanism it's always been.
It's all the same politics.
Yeah.
It's all the same contagion.
We're just doing a half-time sort of a substitution, that's all.
Exactly. And Rupert Lowe has come down like an absolute lion on this, and he is causing them hell, and they know it. And again, the Daily Mail has been the one publishing hit piece after hit piece after hit piece.
Yes. Like,
they hate us, but they can't deny us. That's the point. For example, you've got so many of these great clips that are coming out. This is Owen Jones went down to Makerfield. Owen Jones went down to Makerfield, and I was watching his video on it, and it was incredible.
Right.
Store say they'll literally millions of people will leave the country. They'll be deported. Millions.
Well, good.
There's a reason that people are flipping to Restore. There's a reason for it. It's because millions of people are going to get deported.
I absolutely love that Owen Jones said to her that millions of people would be deported, expecting her to recoil like a vampire in the sunlight. And she was just good.
Yeah.
That's where the British people are now.
Yes. a large percentage of the British population are at the point where, like, that's what I want, actually.
Yes.
You can't scare me with this. that's threatening me with a good
only,
time.
The only way you could have upgraded that clip if she had said, no, it needs to be billions.
Anyway, so this is a clip that we got because Luca went up and they filmed an entire street flipping to restore from reform. Because, well, why would you want the reheated burger? Why wouldn't I want the freshly cooked juicy steak? Yep. And so the activists have gone to the street, spoken to everyone on the street, and they said, yeah, no, actually, we think you're right. We are going to vote for restore. We'll put up the restore signs instead of the reform signs.
And it happened all at once because the signs got delivered all at once.
Yes. And so they took down the signs and put it up. A lot of reform activists online were very upset by this, but that's just too bad, frankly. That's just too bad. Anyway, so we've got lots of reports from our guys on the ground in Makefield, because, of course, we have thousands of people have gone up and canvassed for us, right? So we can just listen to what they say. Now, I don't know whether what they're saying is accurate. I don't know whether what they're saying is because of a selection bias or a filter because they're there. But the point is, this is what our people are saying. This is what their experience on the ground is. This is what Dan Hodge's experience on the ground is. This is what the Daily Telegraph's experience on the ground is. This is what Owen Jones's experience on the ground is. I haven't been there. I can only go from what people are saying. But this chap says, from the scenes in Makefield today, this is going to be very, very close with Restore and Labour. Reform are done. The tables are flipped. Restore easily second from what we saw on the ground. Makefield and the UK need Restore, of course. So, okay, I mean, I don't know. But all I can say is the people on the ground are saying stuff like this. This is just, I mean, I don't know who this guy is, but we've got loads of friends, loads of subscribers to the podcast who are in Makefield are saying, by the way, This is looking amazing.
So I heard this the first few times and I thought, no, it's too good to be true. I can't believe it.
Exactly.
But it's like dozens of people that we know are like solid.
But also
are telling us the same thing.
Exactly. People who we know personally. We've known 4 years. We've worked with 4 years who have gone there and we know are not hysterical. We know they're not liars. And we know they know they're supposed to check their biases.
Yes.
We know that they know this because they're long in the tooth.
It's not like they're telling us something different in private. Hand on heart, they're telling us the same thing in private.
All the same. Well, to be honest with you, they're telling us things that sound better than this in private.
That's true, yes.
But again, I'm exactly that. I don't want to bring myself to believe it. But the thing is, my personal skepticism is why I've called every election for the last decade wrong, right?
Yes.
I call every single election be the inverse Kramer, right? Like, if you'd bet on every election I called in the other way, you'd have been right almost 100% of the time. Because I get that self-doubt in the back of my mind, going, no, that can't be. It can't be that we're going to win Brexit. It can't be that Trump's going to win. It can't be that, you know, we're going to get a clean sweep in Great Yarmouth. It can't be that we're going to win Makerfield. And so I don't know. All I've got is that voice of self-doubt. But all of the signs are like, no, this is going to be a place where we perform admirably at the very least.
Yes.
Right? 5%, I doubt it, right? Doubt 5%.
Yeah.
Judging from just the things that we see coming out of it. So anyway, you've got, as you said, they don't even make the positive argument anymore, right? There's just an incredible meme by Gamesmaster. They don't even attempt to argue the policy. Because every policy they come out with is Reform's policy from a month ago. Restore's policy from a month ago, right?
Yes.
You saw the other day that Nigel Farage was like, here's my Substack. Oh, demographic change in Britain isn't good, isn't it?
Did I hear, just as I was coming into the podcast, people talking in the office, just as I was going out, saying that Jenrick has now come out and said millions must go?
Yes.
I wonder where he got that line from.
Yeah, I wonder. Do you remember they started saying detain and deport as well?
Yes.
It's like, sorry. Like, we know you're stealing our recipes, and why would I want to eat at your cheap knockoff burger joint when I could go to the steakhouse?
Yes.
I just don't understand what you think you're winning here and why you have to be a day late and a dollar short on every single goddamn policy. Like, it doesn't make sense that you hamstring yourselves in this way.
And again, I'd extend the same offer. I mean, I'll read the comments on the video below this when it goes out on YouTube. If you're a Reform supporter and you can make an argument as to why Reform are better on their own merits than Restore, make the argument and I'll read it. And I put that out so many times and I haven't seen one argument yet.
Well, one argument that I've heard is, well, they're not racist. So, well, that's a superb argument. That's really persuaded me that Nigel Farage is the man of the hour. Anyway, so Let's go on to Nigel Farage, in fact, because there's a lot that's happened with Nigel Farage recently. And it seems that he is beginning to crack at the seams.
I had noticed a bit, yes.
It seems that the pressure is getting to him.
Yes.
Because this, like we said, follows in the wake of actually a bunch of reform failures. So we've talked about how they've been dipping in the polls, where they should be rising in the polls. I mean, like, reform, I mean, remember, when Boris Johnson came in, he was on 52%. When Keir Starmer came in, he was on 41%, something like that.
Yeah, that went down a bit.
Of course, that went down a bit. But Nigel Farage has never managed to crack more than 31%. And Yeah, 31% was where they maxed out in the polls, right? And that was...
Oh, so Reform, not his personal approval rating?
No, his personal approval rating. Reform was a party in the polls. 31%. And that was a year ago, right? Now, they dipped down to 24%. They're back at like 25, 26%. So, okay, a quarter of the electorate are supporting you. That's not, I mean, that does put them in the lead, admittedly, but that's only because we've got such fractured politics at the moment. Mm. But it's not good, and you should be at 40% plus in the polls. Right? Mm. You should be the right-wing insurgent party who's like, no, we're just going to storm everything. And so, well, what happened in the local elections? You underperformed by hundreds of council seats. Labour and the Conservatives kept or advanced in some areas, like in London, where you did minimal campaigning and expected to just sort of swagger in as if it was your time, like Hillary Clinton.
Well, I mean, I remember Kemi Badenoch celebrating because she only lost like 6,000 seats.
Well, no, but she 500 did, or 800 seats.
Or however many it was. But it was considerably less than she was expected to lose. Whereas Reform, they weren't celebrating even though they had won seats because it was considerably less than they were supposed to win.
They were celebrating, that's the thing. But it's like, but Keir Starmer has already managed the expectations of the Labour Party saying, oh yeah, we'll lose some, but it won't be as bad as you think. And it wasn't as bad as they thought. And the same with the Conservatives, where Kemi Badenoch was actually celebrating this. And of course, vote reform, get Starmer out. Well, he didn't go. Because you didn't deliver the mortal blow to him. And then in Gordon and Denton, you lost to the Greens.
Yeah.
You didn't mobilise the disenfranchised white working class. Why not? And then, like I said the other day, Farage puts out the Substack going, well, the demographics of Britain are a concern. It's like, yeah, but that flies in the face of everything you've said about the demographics of this country up until this point.
Stephen Edgington sat you down and said, are you concerned about the demographics of the country? And he said emphatically, no.
Richard Tice, well, I'll be long gone.
Like that's even worse.
This is why people think Reform have this kind of used car salesman attitude about them. Just like, well, they don't care. They're just here to sell me a product and get my vote, and then they get money and whatever, but they're not here to actually substantively fix any of the problems. So anyway, he did a press conference in Makerfield the other day, and he did an interview with Nick Ferrari the other day, and these were very, very, very interesting. We've got the appropriate clips, as Kevin points out here, right, Nigel Farage's response to Nick Ferrari here is just very bizarre. Let's watch this.
Do you want to be prime minister?
Do you know something, Nick? Not for the sake of the office or the title, because I couldn't give a damn about that. Never been interested in that. For me, politics is not about it's not about what I become in terms of a personal status. It's about what I can do. Right now, I believe I'm the only person that's got sufficient public rapport and the courage to take on the establishment and do what needs to be done. Right now, I'm the right person. May well be in a couple of years' time or more, somebody else comes along who's better equipped. Right now, I do believe it's me.
So you...
Okay, so 2 points there. First of all, the bit where he does that, which he's been doing a lot lately.
Yeah.
The second thing is he's already talking about quitting before the next election.
Yeah.
Two years is before the next election.
I mean, this is really weird. Like, this is a stress response.
Yes.
Where he's like, you know, this is what I do when I walk into the room and my kids have made a
it's
mess.
I think it's a specific stress response. Because, I've only ever seen, I'm 46 years old now. I've only ever seen people do that when they have screwed up.
Yep.
And it's their fault and they bloody know it. So, I mean, a few years ago, I watched somebody basically for no conceivable reason drive into the back of a car, right? Yeah. And he did that.
Yeah.
That is the face that you make when you know you screwed up.
Oh yeah, it's the face I make when I know I've let my kids play on their own for too long and they've wrecked one of the rooms.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I should have,
this is my own fault. I knew it was my own fault. Mm. But again, another couple of things on this is really weird. He's like, I'm the only person who can, I don't care about being prime minister. It's like, I don't really believe that. I've been following Nigel Farage for long enough to know that he is an egotistical man, and he does like the prestige and social status that comes with all of his position. And he's viciously defended this social status in the past.
Yeah.
And this is why Restore Britain even exists, because remember, the first thing he came out and said after kicking Rupert out of the party was he was trying to take over the party. It's like, but that's a question of status. He can't possibly have had the actual mechanical ability to take over.
I mean, there's no way to do it.
Exactly. Yes. There's just no way to do it. You don't have elections or anything. He can't wrench the company off you on company's house. Yeah. There's nothing he could have done. So it was all about prestige. It was all about who the perceived...
Popularity.
Exactly right. So I don't believe that for a second, right? I don't believe that you don't consider this a big popularity contest. I know you do, right? But secondly, he's like, oh, I'm the only person who is prepared to do what needs to be done in the face of the establishment. So, okay, but why don't you do it then? Yes. Like, because you are in Parliament. You have a suite of tools at your disposal to actually do things.
Yes.
You don't do anything in Clacton. You don't put the parliamentary notes in. I mean, you're literally 10 to 1 to Rupert Lowe's parliamentary notes. Mm. You don't actually do the things that this office empowers you to do.
Well, for example, you could have done the thing that you'd promised to do that Rupert Lowe then ended up doing.
That has been released today, which is the rape gang inquiry, right? Again, you said you were going to do things, but you don't. And then you come out and say, well, I just want to do the right thing to save the country. Well then do it.
Yep.
Nothing's stopping
and
you.
And bear in mind, the reason why Rupert Lowe did the rape gang inquiry, he didn't actually make that commitment. It's just that he was sat next to Nigel Farage
when
he made that promise. And Rupert Lowe felt that because he was on the bench next to Farage in the party when that commitment was made, when he realised that Reform were not going to do the rape gang inquiry, he felt beholden to do it because it was part of his promise by being there.
He was in the party when the promise was made.
So his personal commitment compelled him, and he spent an enormous amount of his own money doing this, but he felt personally compelled that he had to do it.
I mean, I'm only about 15 pages actually into the rape gang report.
I bet it's horrific.
It was released about an hour before we started recording this. Right. So I haven't had that much time to read
it. I was in the podcast. I haven't seen it yet.
It's awful. I mean, Jesus Christ, like horrors like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
But again, you didn't do this, Nigel. You could have done any of it. Mm. You promised to do it. You didn't do it. So all I'm saying is I don't really believe
For 90% of the time when Lowe was doing that, Restore was a movement, not a party.
Yeah.
So anyone, including Reform, could have said, okay, we come on board and do it.
We'll pick it up with you.
Yes.
But of course, Nigel can't do that because of the bitchy way that he tries to destroy his political opponents. But anyway, so you had, like you said, this, where he, again, and that's the third point that you made. Like, why are you basically checking out before the election?
Mm.
Right now, I'm the only person who could do it. But what, I realise my star's on the decline? Mm. I realise that I'm not going to make it to the next election? I'm teeing up Zia Yusuf or Robert Jemrick or whoever? Mm. I'm going to put a Muslim or a Tory in charge so that, you know, they get to be the prime minister? What are we saying here, Nigel? Like, and this is why I got this chap's comment here. Because it's like, it's just weird. He brags about being ahead in the polls, 200 polls consecutively, but can't just say yes when he says he wants to be the prime minister.
That is by far the easiest answer to give.
If that were me, I'd be like, well, yeah, and judging by the way the polls are, it looks like I'm going to be. So here's what I'm going to do, right? This is what happens when the British people vote. Millions must go.
In terms of political interview, that is teeing you up to then give a 3-minute monologue on all the things you're going to do in government. Tony Blair would have knocked that out of the park. I mean, you would have lost the rest of the interview to Tony Blair while he started doing his Blair hands, talking about everything. But Farage just makes that face and is like, well,
why is he putting his head in his hands here? Like, why does he look like, as you said, he knows he's screwed up?
Yeah.
But this wasn't the only time. He in this press conference at Makerfield, Beth Rigby asked Nigel a question. Now, Beth Rigby is asking him to kneel him, as UK John here has pointed out. He is right. She's definitely doing this for a reason. But why doesn't Nigel Farage have a good response to it? Let's watch.
And when it comes to Makerfield, Restore are doing well here, and it could really help. It could really hurt you. What's Rupert Lowe got that it's appealing to some people over you? Thank you very much.
Elon Musk, thank you. I mean, most people here who say Restore, and by the way, it's not a very big percentage, most people here would not recognise a photograph of him. right? This is stuff that pops up on their phones. That has been the problem with it. I do not believe for a moment it will last. And look, whatever the family said in Belfast, the fact is things kicked off in Belfast.
Well, he goes on to about Belfast, but
again, yeah.
Again, like, where was the
Yeah, just,
like, again, like, this looks like stress and tension that he can't manage properly, right?
Yeah.
And his answer, oh, it's Rupert Lowe. It's Elon Musk, sorry. It's like, no, Rupert Lowe, like, Elon Musk personally promotes him, sure. But, I mean, why isn't he personally promoting you? But Rupert Lowe's primary social media outlet is Facebook. Mm. He's got, you know, 1.6 million followers on Facebook. The numbers are just staggering. It's something like 500 million impressions a month, something like that. Yeah. It's wild because, of course, they post very regularly and these go very far on Facebook. And the normies who are still on Facebook are like, oh, yeah, this is pretty good stuff.
Yep.
It's not the milquetoast Farage nonsense. And so, like...
I think he's right. We know that Farage has continually assassinated... I mean, even Stephen Wolf, who used to be on this podcast, he was one of the guys assassinated. I mean, in his case, slightly more literally, in that he had somebody actually beat him. But he Kilroy Silk... I mean, there's too many names to mention.
Dozens.
Yeah.
It's literally dozens.
Dozens of names. So he has kicked out dozens and dozens of people over the years to make sure that nobody becomes more popular than him. Being popular... Being the top girl in the class is clearly a very important thing to him. Now, before he did that to Rupert Lowe, so if you go back to the last election, the entire right were huge Farage fangirls. We used to have him on our video wall for our Lads Hour.
Because he was the only guy we could put our name behind.
He had so much adoration. He could go out into any street and people would be like, Nigel, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
And he's no longer the most popular girl. And it is eating him.
And the thing is, as you said, he's the person to blame. There's no one else who can point the finger at here. If you're feeling besieged by Rupert Lowe, you got to ask yourself, well, why isn't he a Reform MP? Because he was a Reform MP, Nigel. Like, you brought him into the
and
parliament.
He would have boosted your star.
100%.
Because if the more popular that Rupert Lowe, and Rupert Lowe was becoming very popular at the point they kicked him out, everyone would have looked at that and said, look, Nigel's doing great. He's got great people underneath him, like Rupert Lowe. It would have boosted him because he's on top of the organisation.
Nigel thought he could control the direction of politics in this country, right? And so he was like, oh no, Rupert Lowe wants to deport the Pakistani rapists and their families because they're complicit. And as he said in the press conference the other day, that was too far right. We had to get rid of him and that's just how things are going to be, right? No, how things are going to be, Nigel, is that you're going to get dragged to the right by Rupert Lowe whether you like it or not. Right. No matter what happens, you are going to scramble to catch up to Rupert Lowe setting the agenda of the country. Because at the moment, Rupert Lowe is setting the agenda of the country. He comes out, gives a very sensible position that happens to, in our insane politics, fall far to the right of whatever the Blairite, Cameronite consensus is that you're trying to ingratiate yourself into, and you are dragged to it, physically dragged to it. Now, that could have been because of he could have been your bright star in your party, and Rupert Lowe comes out and says something, and you have to go on Sky News, and Beth Rigby's like, do you really stand by Rupert, as I said? And you can look at the popularity and go, well, I mean, it's quite a hardline thing, but really, there's something to it, isn't there, Beth?
Yeah.
Which is why everyone's supporting it, and that's why he's in my party.
And there's nothing that Rupert Lowe has said that would raise an eyebrow from either a Conservative or a Labour supporter in the 1960s.
No.
They would have just gone, what... We have massive amounts of Pakistani rape camp. Yeah, of course.
Just like the woman talking to Owen Jones. Yes. Millions will go. Good.
Yeah.
Like that's the point.
It's only because we've been so bent out of shape with the Great Awakening over the last 20 years. It's the Western nations have lost their mind.
Yeah.
That's why Rupert Lowe appears to be right wing.
Yeah. And so you've seen memes about this all over Twitter. You know, this is not good optics for Reform. Right, this is pretty much indefensible that when Farage is put in a spot under this sort of pressure, he's folding. He's not doing a good job. And so, I mean, if you're the public, you're looking at this like,
well, why would I want this guy? Because, I mean, like, every time you see Rupert Lowe, he's got a bit of a cheeky, chappy smile on his face. Like, no, we're on to something good here, and we're going to win. And every time he's challenged, he just says, I don't care, and I'm not backing down. And it's every issue as well. So, when he's talking to, what's-her-face on the news agents, Emily Maitlis, and she's like, well, you're a racist, Rupert. I don't care. So, what about this activist in your party who said these things? Like, we don't care. We're not going to police the membership. We're here to win.
Yeah.
We're not here to, like, you know...
British citizens can back whatever party they want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, we're not here to, like, morally police the... tone police the things that members of the party say on Twitter. That's just irrelevant. Nonsense. Mm. And Farage is here for that. That's why Rupert Lowe's been kicked out. That's why you got kicked out.
Yep.
And that's why, that's why so many people
were
kicked
out. There was no shortage of people who have been kicked out of Reform.
And he just thought there'd be nowhere else for you to go. That's what it was. He thought there'd be nowhere else. Anyway, so apparently Harry Cole has reported from The Sun, has reported that Nigel Farage sought Donald Trump's advice on how to deal with Elon Musk's increasingly deranged attacks on Reform and support for Rupert Lowe. What could you do? Like, what are your options here? I mean, you're trying the only thing that you know how, which is to adopt his positions. It doesn't seem to be winning for
you. Well, you could get behind, you could do everything in your power to make sure that Keir Starmer remains prime minister and X gets banned.
Yeah, I guess that's your only option, actually, yeah, at this point. But that's the point, isn't it? If Farage is now, like, ringing up Donald Trump, who has been distancing himself from Farage for some time, not convinced they are actually the buddies that he thinks they were.
Well, you look at the first Trump election, he had Farage on stage with his arm around him. Second Trump election, Farage said, I'm going to take a break from GB News to come and campaign for you. And Trump was like, no, you're not.
Wasn't even invited.
Yep.
And so, yeah. So now, and now if he's like, Donald, I need help, Donald Trump doesn't like losers.
I mean, I'm amazed that he managed to get the call through.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit ambiguous as to whether Trump took the call or not.
Yeah, I imagine he asked his advisors for advice, you know.
All right.
But then you had Gwynne Towler outdoing expectation management on Times Radio.
Mm.
And this is just very interesting.
I think it's a very, very hard ask. I really do. I think if it was anybody but Burnham, I think we'd be a shoo-in. But Burnham does change the weather, let's be honest about it. And we've also had this experience where Tory-supporting and Labour-supporting papers have made a massive, massive effort to big up the presence of Restore. I have, as you know, Kate...
By calling us Nazis, mate!
Gwynne Towler has seen the Reform internal polling and is setting up a narrative for what comes after.
The media ginned up Restore support.
Yes.
And hard to believe.
And what does he immediately talk about? He talks about Labour probably winning and Restore coming second.
That is
what he's inferring.
Yeah, that seems to be what he's implying. And so, that doesn't sound implausible to me. It doesn't sound, and it will actually be that Reform was splitting the votes and allowed Burnham in if that's the case. And again, I'm not making any predictions. I don't know.
You can't think that's too crazy, because that is exactly what happened at the last election. So the narrative was from Peter Hitchens and all the rest, don't vote Reform because you'll split the Tory vote.
Yeah.
And actually it turned out that it was the Tories splitting the Reform vote.
Well, I mean technically the Tories did get more votes than Reform. So
But very, very soon after the election, that Tory support just melted away.
Yeah.
And if the right had backed Reform, then we wouldn't have had a Labour government. Yeah. So, yeah.
Reform were the direction of travel. Mm. It's just the election was like a snapshot in time on that journey.
Yes.
Well, this is another one of those cases where there's a direction of travel here, and Reform are now the snapshot in time in the direction towards Restore.
I think it's very analogous to 2019.
Yeah. And so it very much is. And so... As you said, Gwynne is kind of managing expectations here by saying, look, as you say, I've seen the internal polling, just saying it's not going to be good for us.
And I need a narrative, and I'm setting it up now.
Yeah. And so you're the ones who have bigged up Restore. It's like, no, the 1,000 activists who turned up, who didn't turn up for you because you kicked their guy out of the party, but they could have turned up for you.
Mm.
They could. I mean, again, it didn't have to be that Rupert Lowe started his own party.
Nope.
You could just be like, okay, well, what we're going to do is, I mean, and this has always been the problem with Farage. He's afraid of the media. No, he's terrified of the media. He's always been afraid of it. And he is a creature of the media. He's always used the media to his advantage. And for some reason, he just didn't have the balls to go full Trump on this and be like, okay, we're just going to do exactly what Owen Jones is doing. And we'll have something that is so concretely desirable, but also so demonstrably outside of the current consensus that merely uttering it will be, oh yeah, that sounds great. And they won't be able to not tell people what we intend to do. Right. So
the whole Trump playbook.
Exactly. The whole Trump playbook. And then we'll just have this massive tent. So we'll just get everyone in, literally from like, you know, Richard Tice to Stephen Laws, we'll just get everyone in. So everyone is just singing from the same hymn sheet. It's reform, blah, blah, blah. And then we will win everything all the time, everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I will just point out that what Farage did is exactly the same mistake that Starmer made. So reform basically cut off the right wing.
Yep.
And that has obviously backfired on. But Labour did the same thing, where as soon as Starmer came in, he just Stalined a whole bunch of MPs. I mean, he even tried to kick out Diane Abbott.
I know.
And on the assumption that the left would have nowhere to go. And they've all gone and formed the Greens now.
And the Greens are going to eat their lunch in a bunch of seats.
Yes.
A bunch of seats.
So what has happened is both the hegemons on the right and left have made exactly the same mistake. And I just come back to my earlier prediction. It's going to end up being Greens versus Restore.
Oh, yeah, that's 100%.
I don't know when it gets there, but it will get there.
In like a decade's time,
yes.
It's definitely going to be that. You know,
maybe a lot sooner.
It could be a lot sooner, but that is the direction of travel. And I think it's inevitable at this point. Anyway, so we see the weakness of reform everywhere. As we covered last time, their leaflets are turning suspiciously like our leaflets. Like they just happen to be using the dark blue on their website. They've changed it to the dark blue rather than the teal that everyone recognizes. And no picture of Nigel Farage on the leaflets at right. Interesting. And that's because, another one as well. Gemrick has now started coming out. Millions must go. Well, who the hell said that in their announcement video when they were announcing their brand new party? It wasn't Nigel Farage, was it? Nigel Farage, no, I don't want mass deportations to my name. Now is millions must go.
Millions must go is basically the online catchphrase for Restorers.
That's exactly.
It's what we say all the time.
I mean, it was in the video that he put out.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And that's where it really originated from. And then reform are like, okay, but we can go on the mainstream media and we can borrow this phrase and pretend it came from us.
Yes. So again, once again, they've just caught up with Rupert Lowe's rhetoric, with Restore's policy, which means, again, whether you like it or not, Nigel, we're dragging you to the right. Rupert could have done that in your party, but you couldn't take it.
Yep.
And so now it's going to happen outside of your party and you're probably going to lose because of it. And when polls, Lord Ashcroft polls, did a very interesting thing about reform voters. Which party would you vote for at a general election if for some reason no reform candidate was standing in your constituency? Wow, that's a pretty large percentage for Restore Britain. Remember what I was saying about preference cascades?
Yes.
At some point, it becomes apparent to everyone that actually, no, I don't want this thing. We're just going to go for this thing. We're just going to do it. And that's what happened to reform in the 2024 election, right? There was a preference cascade in favor of reform.
Yes.
Because it was clear the Tories.
Well, that was the point I was trying to make earlier,
It was clear the Tories, which is terrible. And a large number of people were like, yeah, okay, we're just going to do that. Well, that's already happened inside reform.
But I mean, what this is telling us, right? Because I know I've said several times that I've been asking reform voters, what is the positive argument? Apart from we're more likely to win, because that is the only argument they've got. What this is telling me is if Restore comes second or first in Makerfield What's against Labour, 42% of the vote have no reason not to immediately peel away and join Restore.
Yes. So that's about 10 percentage points in the polls. It'll be like, I mean, probably a bit more, probably like 12 percentage points in the polls.
Yes.
So like, yeah, okay, well, I'll support Restore then, because I just want the right to win is what they're saying, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, great. You know, I want a strong patriot party that's going to win. Well, this shows that you are actually a kind of hollowed out shell now, right? So the preference cascade has already happened in reform. You're just the current thing, the blockage that's holding things up. It's like, well, I guess while we're here, we've got to vote for reform. But when they disappear, I'm going to restore, say, almost half of their own voters. And that is wild. Mm. That is absolutely wild. I mean, a large number of them won't vote more, but like still, that is terrifying if you're reform, because what that means is that essentially you have to keep that don't split the vote narrative. going for as long as you can. Because the second
you've somehow got to do it for 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Because the second that narrative buckles even slightly, yeah, half your votes are gone.
Yes.
And that is terrifying.
Yes.
For them. And so, again, this is why you see them churning to the right. Again, like, this is the funniest thing, right? So you remember that guy who said that he was going to melt down Nigerians and turn them into pothole filler?
Yes.
And they were like, oh, you're out.
They haven't made him shadow transport minister.
Not yet.
Right.
But they have reinstated him quietly.
Okay.
After kicking him out. It's like, yeah, but why did you kick him out then?
That was a bit performative.
Exactly. Why kick him out? Because you're afraid of them. Because you don't understand they're the enemy and you're trying to gain acceptance from them. And so, like, you've got, what's his name? I can't remember. Kenyon. Robert Kenyon. For him making silly comments, right? It's just silly comments that he made online because whatever. And Carol Vorderman has been out here demanding an apology over him sexualizing her, which is like,
oh, come on.
Sexualizing Carol Vorderman.
Like, the woman who went out and bought the tightest knitted top that she could find when she was on Countdown.
She has been sexualizing herself for decades.
Yes.
In public, against my will, frankly.
Yes.
I know about Carol Vorderman's sex life because it's constantly in the newspapers.
Yes, right? Yes.
I don't want to know about Carol Vorderman's sex life. So for her to be like, oh, I'm going to get very precious about this man sexualizing me on a Twitter post.
Yeah, obviously not.
That 12 people saw 15 years ago. No, I'm sorry, Carol. I'm not buying that.
But what I hate is the way that Kenyon responded to it. Yeah. He had obviously been given media training and advice maybe from Tice, which is this is how you apologize on question time for this. It's the wrong tactic. He should have just turned around and said, yeah, I'm a plumber and I banter with my mates. What of it?
It was a joke. Don't care.
Yeah.
And you know what, right? Finally, after stepping on this rake over and over and over, Farage finally got dragged to that point as well. He finally got dragged to this point. Listen,
on the past social media comments, I'm going to say this. You know, these comments were posted a decade ago. They've been taken wildly out of context. But they're the sort of comments that you won't necessarily get if you're an Oxford-educated career politician living in a nice postcode in London. But I tell you what, they're the kind of comments you'll hear in every pub in the country every evening, and we should be unapologetic that Rob is an ordinary bloke who's carved quite a career for himself, had the guts to set up a business, served as an army reservist, is a patriot, likes his rugby, likes the odd pint, and said a few laddish things on social media 10 years ago. Do you know what I'd say to that? I'd say, so what? And what about?
That is so similar to what we said on the show last week with Connor.
Yes. Why did it take a week of them raking you over the coals?
Well, presumably because somebody at Reform had to watch our stream from last week and then go to Farage and say, oh, I've got some more brilliant political... You know, I always come to you on a Wednesday, Nigel, after having some brilliant political insights, but it's Wednesday again, and I've just had a brilliant political insight. What you do is... And Nigel was like, yeah, that's bloody good. Yeah. This guy's good, isn't he?
Did Rupert Lowe also do that? Yes, he did. He said, I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, then that'll be... But why wasn't this your first step forward 2 years ago?
Because he doesn't really believe this stuff.
Exactly. Because he's not courageous. He doesn't really believe it.
Yeah.
And we're at the point where he has been dragged to the right wing and forced to stand on his own candidate. Because, of course, he can't replace Kenyon. I mean, you know, if this had happened 6 months ago, he would have just Kenyon out. Don't want any media storms. New person in who's never had a social media presence and is not very interesting or anything like that. It's too little too late. Is what I'm saying, Nigel. And so I mean, like I said, it's going to be, by the time you get this, it'll be tomorrow that we get the Makefield election results. I think they're going to be very interesting. I think from, as you said, from Gwynne Taylor's response, from Farage's stress, the Reform internal polling is not good. Mm. We know the Restore internal polling, which is about 20 to 24% and has been repeatedly over the past couple of weeks. So, all I'm saying is that this was yours to lose, and it looks like you've lost it.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.